The Expats. Is it Expats? Just Expats.
Just Expats.
Just Expats. Mm-hmm. But it's based on the novel The Expatriates by Janice Y.K. Lee. So I do mix it up a bit.
Yes, it is. That's, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. The show is directed by Lulu Wang, mm-hmm. who we know from The Farewell.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
A Boston and, College graduate. So
yes.
Remember that.
Mm-hmm. Go Eagles.
Which as we are as well. So a little personal connection there. We don't know her, but we feel a kinship.
No. Exactly. You know, always.
An alumni always. Kinship.
Yeah. And I think you said an all-female writer's room.
Yes. Yes. All women. She says she did not intend for it to be an all-women's writer's room, but that is how it worked out. It is also very diverse writer's room, and she was just ended up being so happy that it turned out that way. But that was not her goal, but I thought that was very cool. I don't know that we've covered one that is truly an all-women's writer's room based on a book by a woman, written as, and directed by Lulu Wang. So this is...
I can't remember really Little Fires checking Everywhere.
I don't know. I didn't think so. Yeah. But anyway.
Okay.
Yes. So... Really checks all our boxes, clearly.
It does. And also the themes of motherhood.
Motherhood.
And grief.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Grief checks Lulu Wang's, you know, her specialty, mm-hmm. which is infused in the show. And then motherhood. There's some scenes to talk about here, for sure.
Yeah, that is for sure. Yes.
Yeah.
So... I'm excited. We have we talked about The Farewell. That was 5 years ago when that movie came out. We didn't cover it then, I'm saying. But it's been a long time since she's had something. I guess her first feature film was 5 years before that. So she's on like a every
she's
5 years, she says.
Yeah.
And but she said that one of the reasons is there was a lot of slowdowns here because of COVID and whatnot. But that this is, it's a 6-episode limited series, but... Each one is, you know, they're a good amount of time, but she's like, they're about an hour, the episodes. But she said it was absolutely like shooting and directing 6 feature films, like from her perspective. It was like making 6 movies. So she's like, it did take me some time for a lot of reasons. But, and I do think they feel like that a little bit. They're dense.
Yeah. Query, I'll think about this as we talk. Is that a good thing? Do you want a limited series to feel like 6 different movies? I mean, it's obviously not, right? Because the show as the book is centered on 3 points of view, basically. Mm-hmm. We have Hillary, we have Mercy, and we have Margaret. Played by Nicole Kidman. And that is consistent throughout.
Mm-hmm.
I was intrigued right off the bat with the kind of opening intro piece where it's Mercy, now we know, narrating kind of an odd bit about people, you know, freak accidents, people dying, and how the stories always center on the victim, and that she didn't want it that way. She wanted to focus on the people like her, the people, the criminal, the
person involved,
the wrongdoer,
with some responsibility.
Well, not the person involved. Yeah. Not the person
involved.
Right. Yeah. No. But in the wrongdoing side, as opposed to the innocent victim.
Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm.
Or the family of, which I found it a little odd. It runs counter to the current tide. I guess it is in line with the wealth of what's out there. True crime always focuses on who did it, and they center the quote unquote bad guy. But there's been Jessica Knowles' Bright Young Women, Murder at the End of the World. There's been a shift to focus on the victims and their families and the impact of their lives and the missing pieces of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
This went back to that. I was intrigued. I wasn't sure how to feel about it, but
Right. And then I'm not sure that's what it does, but we've only seen two, but we're not totally focused on, because we are also witnessing what the victims and the people who this happened to and the aftermath and the effect on their life. So
yeah,
at best it's deceiving then, but right. Because
well,
it's
it is
not
staying with Mercy,
Mercy as right. well, yes. But she's, you know, like the episode two, I mean, episode one, she's in only a bit. So, but then two, we get more once we piece it together and what the connection is. But yeah, what I'm saying is even if that is the focus, it's not the entirely the focus.
Yeah.
So it's a little misleading. Yeah. I was intrigued, but only because I thought, like you're saying, that it is a little bit of an unusual focus.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But yeah. But then we did get more of it. But I you know, it was immediately just, you know, what's happened here? Like what happened? You know, I think for the first one, you are just brought into the something terrible has happened with a child. And which is pretty much any parent's worst nightmare. And what happened and what is this, you know, how are these women all connected and all that? I mean, I think as a setup for that, I was intrigued.
Yeah. I'm like, do you want to go into that? I mean, I don't understand why it was done the way it was. I mean, we are handed right from the very first scene, I think, heavily an idea that this child is dead. The drawing with Jesus. Now, and Nicole Kidman, Margaret, says, why would he do Jesus? We're not religious. So then you're again misled to think the problem with the child being with Jesus is that they're not religious and maybe they don't believe in Jesus, or it would be something else. Another figure with whom this child would be. I don't know. I just, it's given to us clearly from the start an answer that this child is dead and gone. And it's a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah, but I didn't take that. So I didn't take that as absolutely. So I thought it was meant to believe that was a possibility because of those clues. And because
of the very
when a child's
first
thing
gone. Given.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're leaning. I agree it's totally open. We don't know. But a picture with Jesus is intending to lead you in one direction. It is not intending to lead you towards anything else. And now maybe you might be wondering how he died and what happened. Was it disease? Was it an accident? Was it murder? But I don't know. I don't think
think because a kid drew it, I don't necessarily even know that I did all of those thoughts. I thought this could just be a kid who thinks their brother. I mean, it's a kid, you know what I mean? The drawing.
But
so Philip I didn't
is 10 or
I mean, she might just believe her because the child is gone. She might believe the child said, I didn't know that I should take that as anything other than that's a theory.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then you like, probably had no problem with the end. Like
that's why I didn't. Yeah, because I think that must be the difference. Because I just saw in this first one, there's just all possibilities are out there.
I mean, I did Google what happened, and I think a lot of people are confused. That they were led to believe that the child was dead and then the child's missing. Now,
the child could still be dead even after two. I mean, you
agreed.
Right. Okay.
But and certainly as far as the process of grief goes, they mirror each other, but it was anchored in this picture with the child with Jesus. And then it's a lot more complicated than that.
See, this is why it must not have bothered me, because it did not anchor me there. I was not anchored there. In which case, yes, you'd be like, wait, although, is that really that inconsistent, even if you were anchored in that the child went missing? I mean, the child could then have been murdered or...
Yeah, I guess I just don't understand why episode two came before episode one. There's so much. It's not even just about Gus's...
Not episode two came before episode, or why did it
why
go?
Why didn't? Yeah.
Because oh, why
so
didn't?
So much
come
more.
Before.
Mercy. So much more. That I didn't have any context for in the first episode.
Yeah.
Which is later in time than the second episode, but not while we're watching it. And so there was so much more context to everything. I understand suspense. I understand planting seeds for suspense. Not sure I understand why. And I'm glad they put the two out together.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that helped. You couldn't not.
Yeah, watching them back to back, I was like, okay, I get this. Mm-hmm. But I still just didn't understand why the first one wasn't the chronological. Why we weren't.
Oh, but don't they do that a lot in things where and then
absolutely. Oh, 100%. Timelines are messed up for suspense all the time. I don't think it furthered the narrative here. I don't see how it furthered the narrative here.
Got me in thinking, the same ways that these often do. They start with this where something's happened. You're seeing the aftermath of it. You don't know what the something is. You're intrigued. You know that it involves something about a missing child. Like it raises all these questions that you then hopefully want to click to the next one to get the answers. And then we are brought back and like, now we're going to tell you the story. It's like a prologue in a way.
No, I get it. I just, it was answered right away. And so again,
but
it wasn't
what was
the
answered
suspense,
right away.
What happened?
But it wasn't.
Child.
We don't know that.
We don't know what.
Who you're saying that? They told, it was answered by the Jesus picture?
No, it was answered at the end of episode 2.
Right, but we still don't know. That's not answered to me. Like, it's not answered. He went missing, so now we don't know what happened. I now want to know what happened. Is the kid, where is the kid? Is he still alive? Is he dead? Did somebody, right?
Like, but that's not answered by episode 1?
No.
I have no idea what's... later, he's, right, they don't know anything.
Right?
I mean, if they're hiding that ball, this is going to get worse for me.
Right, he could be dead.
They
or
someone something.
Could... Not they, but the child could still be alive, could be dead, or we're going to find out just basically for the rest of this what happened to the child.
But you
and
think
who was involved?
Someone in this knows.
No,
that.
I don't. Maybe because, Mercy, but I don't think so. I don't know. No, but won't that be revealed? I'm not saying somebody.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Will it be revealed over the course because they're going to find that information over a year later? Because it doesn't start. At the start, they don't know anything more.
Right, right.
So it's going to come out now?
It could, couldn't it?
I don't know. I was not thinking that. I definitely am not thinking that.
I mean, or else
missing.
What's...
Then it's going to be how their lives have unraveled between episode 2 and episode 1. How have their lives unraveled?
Right.
That's what I'm thinking we're going to get.
I think that... We will get that, but I'm not sure that's mutually exclusive from also finding out maybe more about what happened to the child.
Well, it can't happen before episode 1, right? It can't happen before that party. So then it would have to go beyond that narrative.
Yes. And I mean, I have no idea. I mean, of course, now there is a book, so there's source material. So it's out there, I'm sure, as to what... I did not Google that because I do not want to know what happened. You know, with the book. So,
I will say
that is one of the problems of not having read the book and watching, you know, people who have kind of know already.
Yeah.
Unless
that's
they dramatically changed it, but which sometimes
that's
happens.
True.
But.
Yeah, that's true. I have been reading it slowly because I want to stay behind the show now. But I already, the interiority of the book is definitely just something you can't capture in a show.
Yeah, right.
And it's definitely feels very different. It feels very different.
And does it start with any kind? I mean, it wouldn't necessarily, is that chronological? I mean, does it solve that issue that you're having with with the show?
It hasn't told us anything. Just a few pages into it, or I think two points of view into it. So it's like establishing all these people.
Okay. Got it. But like, for example, it doesn't start like with a prologue, like where a year later or something like that. Like it doesn't seem to mirror that.
No.
Okay.
So this is set, the book, like the show, is set in it's set in 2014, 2013, which is pre the 2019 protests against the government in Hong Kong, also pre-COVID, which changed, I think, a lot and was very necessary and important to establish that time frame. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know that any of this could be happening now.
Now, yeah. Both set in Hong Kong. The Hong Kong scenery is, the shooting of that is, I love that part. I've not been there. It's not a part of the country or the world, sorry, that I've been to, and love that. Yeah. I feel like I'm there.
It was very picturesque, right?
Yeah, atmospheric.
There felt like moments that were like an Instagram, Instagram pictures.
Particularly the market where the night market where the, crime happens. Those aerial shots of that and the when it was night and then day and then dark and again. And first of all, that whole setting, just crowds, freaks me out. I just knew, by that point, you knew something was going to happen. And I was on the edge of my seat. I was like, oh my God, the kid's going to get lost. Plus that kid, my God, that he's always running away.
Yeah.
He's running away. I'm like...
I mean, that's another issue I had with that moment. I don't believe that a mother like Margaret, knowing her child, would let Mercy take Gus and not hang back. I would totally let her take him, but I'd be hanging back because I know my kid. I trust Mercy, but I know my kid, and he is a trickster.
Except Margaret put him in the damn hallway. And I went, your kid. That's insane to me. I don't know. I think sometimes she knows that. I mean, I don't know how he got away on the yacht, too, if you know that about your kid.
But those are contained places, right?
He was about to jump overboard. It's the least contained place. It's running. They said sitting inside next to a swimming pool.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't worry about jumping off a boat. He might be lost on the boat or lost in the apartment building.
Literally climbing on the ledge. Could have gone over.
Yes, my kids used to do that, but they never jumped. They climbed to sea differently, over the top railing.
Right, but I'm saying she doesn't see, it doesn't surprise me about Margaret is my point. Yeah, I don't know.
It did surprise me.
She knows that about her kid, and yet to me, she keeps doing things that are going to allow him to possibly be in harm's way.
Yeah. Again, I just think that these are the ways we rationalize these things. Again, in the boat where it's contained, in the apartment building where it's contained, is different than a market, a busy market with under the watch of a stranger. I don't know.
Who puts their kid outside the hallway, though? Just isn't
in your building. I would definitely put my kid.
You can't
kid.
Just put him in a room? It's in the timeout.
Yeah, no, I get it. But I don't think of, I almost, it's not a house. He's not outside. It's an apartment. I feel differently. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but he could just take the elevator down and be outside.
Absolutely, but I'm sure there's doormen. No one's going to let them out.
It's a fancy building. Fancy building.
Yeah. I could relate more to that. I really could. And then that's where maybe because I could relate so much to those other pieces, the piece where she just lets him go with Mercy was a struggle for me.
It's so funny. It's the opposite to me. I'm like, you're with a human being who's holding his hand.
Yeah.
That to me is contained and is protection versus sticking him letting him go out of your sight, which to me is the real anxiety inducing part.
Yeah.
It's the opposite.
I think it's funny though, because we're split, but yet Margaret is the same. So something's inconsistent, right? Something's inconsistent there. Mm-hmm. So what do you want to talk about? I don't have much for the first episode.
Yeah, because I felt like there was a lot of setup of getting to know the women and setting up whatever their connection could be. And, that there's this aftermath of something terrible that has happened.
Yeah.
So I had.
I wasn't. Again, the suspense around that for me was what happened. I thought I knew what happened, which was that Gus is dead. But how did it happen? How are these people connected? Whatever. So I was watching for that. The only scene that I really wanted to focus on. Well, I guess at Clark's 50th birthday, The family is there. They all seem to think they should leave.
Yeah.
That they should not be in Hong Kong anymore. And Nicole Kidman's absolute insistence that they were not going to leave and her odd way about describing it, again, is not, I don't see how the narrative served not knowing that. Because then when I know, if my kid was missing in Hong Kong, you couldn't fucking drag me out of Hong Kong. Ever.
Right. That's why I assumed she wanted to stay.
Right. But that was in the first episode before we knew. Also, if the child is dead and you know that, you might actually want to leave.
Yeah. Then I'd want to leave.
Right.
Yeah.
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 So that nuance was made more sense when we knew what was actually going on with Gus. And as opposed to not just being like, that's interesting. I'm intrigued by that. Let's see. And then finding out why that made so much sense.
Right.
Same
right.
with Mercy and why we knew, again, clearly established that Mercy has done something to this family in a way that if she had known it was this birthday party, she would have never worked it. Right. Mm-hmm. And her extreme reaction and Margaret's extreme reaction, I got it. I was like, okay, something's going on here. But I wanted to see it after I knew what had happened. Then I would be like, oh, I would have felt for them. Instead of being suspense and intrigue, it would have been empathy and heart-wrenching and gut-wrenching.
Right.
And
right,
I didn't get that.
That they shared this awful tragedy together. Yeah, I guess, I got the suspense intrigue. Yeah, certainly not. Totally. We didn't know what their connection was at that point. But it just piqued my curiosity, obviously.
Sure, same. Yeah. The Heart of Glass scene, I absolutely loved. I thought it was fantastic. I loved watching it. I love that song so much.
It's so love good. That song. Yeah. Yes, and those two. Yeah, so that's another thing that we see that her and Hillary obviously had been friends. I mean, her kids call her Auntie Hillary or whatever. But when we first meet them, they've clearly, they're not speaking and something weird is going on. So I loved then that by the end when they start, have that moment together and start, we start seeing that their bond and where that's going to go.
Yeah.
Episode two?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I thought this... So now we got more Mercy right out of gate.
One thing I forgot to note was we have already established in the first episode, which is second chronologically, that Mercy is Korean living in Hong Kong and is often mistaken as if she has more local knowledge than she's a recently moved
Columbia.
There.
Yeah. Columbia grad. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's established very quickly that she's got this outsider status in many ways. Mm-hmm. And that is only added to in episode two in ways that I loved.
Yes. Yeah. You're right. And she right away in the beginning of this, she's on the yacht and she's got, talking to this friend of hers and she tries to introduce her to some of her swanky people. But she's immediately an outsider. Like she says, whatever ways she tries to connect with them in conversation, just it just doesn't land. But it's also in part because, she says some strange things, telling people you just met that you're cursed. These people are like, okay. Like it's a little bit of a conversation ender. Mm-hmm. but I was fascinated by it. I'm like, because like I said, we didn't have much of Mercy yet. And now I'm like, oh, wait a second. Like her face is a receptacle for misfortune, she was told. Like she had her cards read as a teen. You had me right here. We'll never marry. We'll never have a family. So we know.
Die alone.
There's some faded bad luck here around Mercy.
Yes, absolutely. I thought that was intriguing. And then... I mean, it goes deeper, which you assume, but we just see it in everything she does. I mean, her jump, then like not getting a reaction to her receptacle for
misfortune
misfortune and her bad cards, she literally takes her clothes off and jumps into the water. She is so lost. She doesn't know who she is. She's desperate for attention and love and some sort of insider status, meaning like just feeling like she belongs anywhere or knows what to do or knows how to be a part of something. And so it's very clearly established through her stories and her actions that she doesn't know that. I loved that scene under the water. Holy God. Was so anxious for her swimming under the boat.
So anxious.
Really good.
I mean, so anxious. Like that boat is huge. Yeah. And then the way it's shot and then the voices that she's hearing. Oh my God. I was like, please don't do it. Please don't do it. She just, as her friend, you know, when she jumped in, yelled to the others, like, I told you she was crazy. So Mercy is right out of the gate for this episode. I was like, oh, this is going to be, she's interesting.
Yeah. But again, had I wished I had known that before I saw episode one, now it makes complete sense why she's having an affair with Hillary's husband. I mean, it's like, so this is exactly who would find themselves in that position. So
And who's looking, you know, to find some sense of family and connection. So that's why it makes sense on the boat. You know, Margaret is also sort of, I think floundering a little. And Mercy is great with her kids right out of the gate. And they have this connection. And I can see why each of them would be drawn to the other, I think, in this instance.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
So what else? Well, we've got Margaret. I mean, I don't know. I think in this episode, to me too, is the, what you said at the beginning, is really these explorations of motherhood. And, you know, Margaret is struggling. And like I said, I think that's why she is drawn to Mercy, who seems so calm with her kids. Cause Margaret feels like, particularly with Gus, that he's an unruly kid. He's a challenge for her. And she's got this, you know, live-in help, Essie, who, you know, seems to be, you know, doing it all right and having the connections with her kid that she doesn't.
I saw that Margaret thought Essie was the problem because her other two kids have good boundaries and are well-behaved. And Gus... Mm-hmm. Essie's been here. How many times we see here? Essie's been here since Gus was born.
Yeah.
She coddles him. Mm-hmm. She, you know, lays with him. She cooks him whatever he wants. And that he is unruly, not because that's his nature, but that's because that's how he's been taught to expect. He's been taught to expect. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you could see it as she doesn't have the connection with him that Essie does, but I think it's both. She would see it as a bad thing. Like, she shouldn't have that connection.
Yeah, but I thought it was, I see exactly what you're saying. I think it was complicated because she also admits to Hillary that she didn't want Gus. And so I do think she feels some, and maybe disconnect isn't the right word, but like there's something about her and Gus.
Yeah, except then she says, I mean, she said that when she was pregnant, like she got pregnant with her third.
Right.
And then she had the baby and he was cute.
Right.
She was like, I'm sorry. That was all wrong. Mm-hmm. Everything that was all wrong.
But he still is the challenge for her. Right. I mean, she has a hard time with him. And whether it's Essie coddling him and her fault, I mean, she definitely does place blame that way. But I think as a mother, there's no way you don't also blame yourself and whatever. Mm-hmm. And maybe she's just blaming herself for not having the better rules with Essie. But also like Essie's family. So, I mean, that's why Hillary's like, she works for you. I mean, you keep saying that, but she works for you. So I feel like Margaret's confused as to what the problem is. Is it herself? Is it Essie? It's even if it's Essie, that's still her because she's not setting the right boundaries with Essie. So I don't know. I thought it was very complicated struggle that she's having with the kid that then ultimately is the one that goes missing. So that's just an added layer on top of her guilt.
Yeah. How about that moment, Hillary, when Hillary, there's so much to talk about in that moment when Hillary and Margaret are talking. And it's about having the kids, but since you just mentioned the moment, she's like, she's actually not family. I mean, I think that a lot of people do feel that way. And for Hillary to just black and white, like she's not, in one sense, I get it. She's paid. You don't pay your family. But the sentiment, I think, is what Nicole Kidman or Margaret's trying to convey.
Yes.
I don't know. I didn't know.
I think Hillary was, I agree. I think Hillary was trying to tell her that so that she can, because if it's family, then Margaret, by Margaret telling herself that over and over and repeating it, then maybe she isn't setting the boundaries that she needs to. And she thinks if I remind her that she does work for you, so you can change these things. If you don't want her feeding him food you don't like, or if you don't want him sleeping with him, you can do that. And that maybe she thinks that's what Margaret needs to hear to give herself the permission to take back whatever it is you think is happening in a way you don't agree with.
That makes sense.
I
think the opposite, though. I'm like, family. I'm so much easier to put boundaries on family. Like, just to tell my family. Sure.
I don't think most people are. I think if I'm paying someone, I can and tell myself that. Like, I can be like, this is how we're going to do it. It's why I would never let my mom watch my children growing up and I had a nanny.
I would want my mom and not hire someone.
I can't tell my mother. Yeah. Fuck no. She won't listen to a word I say, and no boundary I set will be respected by her, which fine. That's okay. But that's why I don't want to deal with it. So makes I sense. Thought it was like a reminder for her, like, yes, she may be your family and yes, you may care about her, but you can still tell her, you know, what you expect or whatever. But it is hard because even watching that, I do get it because I have had the same nanny since for all 13 years. No, actually, I've had her for 14 years, but for my 13-year-old, she's been here since the day he came home from the hospital. And and this dynamic that I'm... Now, she doesn't live in, so that obviously makes a difference. But the dynamic... Yeah, mine doesn't. Yeah, and Essie does. But the dynamic of, I want Essie, you know, like when he came out of the car. Or, you know, I like how she does it better, you know, as the mom, can be very hard. I mean, it really didn't bother me. And my kids have told me things a million times, like, well, Sonia does it better and I like Sonia's food over your meal. It doesn't offend me at all. I've always been like, that's great. I'm glad you like that better. Yeah. But I don't think everyone would be like that. And it's a weird thing. So it does get complicated. I think she means it when she says she's family, like you're saying, but also then how do I deal with her? Because I don't want to, I don't know what to do here. So that was...
She's fucking up my kid.
So it's tricky. It's tricky.
Oh, boy. Yeah. And then, speaking of tricky, they talk about having kids.
Yes.
And Hillary seems... We've already seen the scene where she's holding the baby in the orphanage. Mm-hmm. And she's really has a tested gut feeling that maybe she does not want to be a mother and that is not the right fit for her. And then Margaret is telling her truth, which is, you know, she thought she didn't want Gus. And then as soon as he came, it was immediately erased and she felt all the things that she felt with the first two. And I believe it for Margaret, but that's not necessarily the way everyone is. It's hard to give your example, a true example, as something that will correlate to another person's experience. It's such a hard thing. I feel for that so much.
Yeah. And if I've related to Margaret and those scenes with her and the caregiver and Essie, I also, though, related to Hillary, because I mean, I think she's saying, like, I don't have any maternal instinct or that feeling of I want to be a mother. I am a mother. I did not have that feeling. I understand I have children. So clearly at some point I made a decision to do that. But like, if you'd asked me ahead of time. It wasn't, I could have easily said what Margaret said. Hillary said, and maybe believed that. Now,
yeah.
I'm not saying that makes what Margaret told her right either, which I don't want you to miss out on the experience. I mean, for Hillary, it still might not be the right choice. But I do think there is this sense that, like, all women, you know, have this instinct, and they don't necessarily. And she's holding that baby in the orphanage, and she's kind of just like looking at her, like,
yeah, mm-hmm. She doesn't. I loved that. It was so nuanced because she doesn't look awkward. She's not doing the caricature, right? Correct. She's clearly holding the baby. She's clearly looking at the baby lovingly and sweetly, but not longingly.
Yeah.
Like, this is, it's so interesting. I really think this is a conversation that cuts both ways and should be honestly talked about cutting both ways. There is a difference between loving kids and loving your kids.
Yep.
And I happen to be someone who loves kids. Mm-hmm. And I've always known I wanted to have kids. And I still will play with little kids now. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's my go-to. Yeah. It is completely separate. First of all, it doesn't mean you'll be a good mother or a bad mother.
Yep.
And it doesn't mm-hmm. mean that having your own kids is separate.
Going to turn because, like you I into said, one of those. You just might only like your own kids, which is me.
Yeah.
It didn't make me into a kid person or a baby person.
Right. Because I have that thing that is not about the kids. And that's the problem, is people mush them together.
Yes.
Because like I said, I still, if there's a big party and there are little kids, mm-hmm. I'm beelining for the little kids. And I like want to hear them talk. And I want to ask them what they're into and who they're playing with. And that has nothing to do with the fact that I am a mother, or I wouldn't have been different before or after. And
correct.
I just think that often gets mushed together. That's not, I don't go over to little kids because I'm a mom. I go over to little kids because that's what I like. I like that. So no, you are not going, no one, I think no one changes. You are what you are before.
Yeah.
And then you can have a few, and like the same thing with kids. My kids, it's not like they changed any of that. I just liked little kids. So I don't know.
I think that's right.
I do think it cuts both ways.
It does.
There's no changing.
Right. And Hillary, that she might have her own children and then be one of those people like me who does love her own children, but she's not a kid or baby person. So, she just doesn't know. But I think it's, and I understand what Margaret's trying to say to her. Like, I just don't want you to miss this experience. But she it's hard. And then,
obviously, she knows exactly what she's missing. And that's okay.
Right. I mean, of course, at the exact moment, then Margaret's kids come in and they're annoying her and they're interrupting, and the whole thing. Yeah. But I also think we have to discuss the fact that she could be uneasy given the issues in her marriage. Like, she... Yeah. She's definitely, having challenges there, and that might not be the best environment to bring when you're already unsure. And, she makes the comment that they had been on the same page about it, right? And so we've heard, I think Emily Giffen wrote a whole book on this, right? Isn't this baby proof? Like, they both agreed that they don't want children, and now her husband has changed his mind, which he's entitled to do.
Sure.
But now I think she feels like the rug's been pulled out from under her, and she thought their life was going to be one thing. And now, she has issues maybe with his drinking. I mean, there's a lot going on here that goes into this whole, am I also ready for a baby? And so there's a lot happening for Hillary.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we do know that they're lying to each other, both of
them. Correct.
She is on the pill and he does not know. He is drinking and
saying he's not.
And so that feels good and all that stuff. So
So they're on the rocks. But as you said, we do know from the first episode that she said, I think my marriage is over. So now we're sort of going back to see what are the issues and why is it deteriorating. And we'll see with that. What about Margaret and her husband and their the scenes sort of around staying there and it being for his career? And we do learn in the first episode, and then more so in this one, that she was a landscape architect and had a seemingly, you know, successful career in the United States, but she can't do that here. And so it's being dictated by his job. I mean, not only why they came there, which I'm sure she agreed to, and they do have this, this great life, but now there is always, with these expat deals, there's an end. And so maybe she only agreed to it for 1 year or 2 years, but now in episode two, we see that he's been offered another contract and she's just like, yeah, I thought we were going home. And this is only happening because you earn more money than me. And, you know, he's trying to be playful and convince her or whatever, but there's definitely some tension there around, you know, her, what she had to give up and abandon to stay here. But that's where you learn that she really wants to go home. Yeah. But in episode one, like you said, she's adamant that they stay. So that's why I just assumed it's because she now believes maybe there's some hope of, she can't leave the place where her son was taken from.
Yeah, I think that the tension between them, though, is normal tension.
Yes.
I think it's a, like a,
absolutely.
At that point. Now, where we get to from the first episode, you know, might be, is added so much more
extreme tension, tense. Like anxiety and everything else. But in this one, yes, it's like the normal, like partnership type issues.
Like figuring out.
The give and take and all that. And so, I took that as like they seem to have a pretty solid foundation. Now, whether any foundation can handle this type of stress and pain that goes with losing a child is a totally different story. But at this point.
And again, I know that there are so many mirrors, but I just, for me, the uncertainty of being missing, I cannot. It's ongoing. Oh, it's not just the grief of losing a child. Mm-hmm. It is the ongoing, and the ongoing, I know, I'm like, who am I? What am I saying? I'm like, I don't think my husband and I don't think could handle that, because the child being lost as opposed to the grief of and closure of death, which is not easy. Trust me, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying I think we would definitely be on different pages. I would want to be doing so much, and I know that my husband would be like, there's nothing we can do, you know, we have to step back and move on with our lives. And I just wouldn't,
it would
be able to do
maddening
that. So also that state of mind is just a different one, and I think it is that is truly a true distinction, as opposed to the nuanced distinction of loss. But
yes,
to feel like I would, it's a lot of stress. So I'm saying it's the stress of the incident, but then the constant, what do we do about it? And, and I mean, every day you could be on a different page, as opposed to in grief of a loss of a death, you might be on the same page, not be on the same page emotionally, but there's nothing you can do.
Yes, correct.
Right.
Yeah.
So that I think was is a big insight for me.
That
we didn't have. Yeah.
And so what about the end? I mean, so he gets taken, and then there's Mercy, the narrator, you know, said something about the perfect family now broken because of her. And then she's like, the police say it's always someone you know or family, which is something they say in these in crimes like this. And then it cuts immediately to David. So then I was like, is he this, like, what's he doing there? And, you know, that's, we now, I guess, learn that's how David meets Mercy. He's trying to help her leave the scene. But when she walks up to Margaret and her husband, like when they're sobbing on the ground, she looks, I mean, haunted. There's nothing she can do. But it says, but there's still more lies then, right? Like she says that David, the voiceover for her says, David said he was on his way home from work, but that was a lie.
Because he was drinking in the bar.
Yeah, because he was drinking in the bar. So we're like, is David involved somehow? Did you take that from that or what? Why is David here? We don't know yet.
Yeah, I don't know. But I do know, again, it made sense why he, and it's the things he says, the way he thinks. He's looking at her and going, has anyone, hello, helped has her. Anyone yeah, paid like, any attention to her?
Right, right.
Now, of course, that's not your first thought. Your first thought is to help the family, actually look for the child, and then also help the family that's grieving. But he is the one that notices her and says, is anyone taking care of her? And then he gives her his coat. And these little small kindnesses are just, again, we know her history for with her family. Yeah. We know her history for getting here, for her quote-unquote friend group. This is like above and beyond in Mercy's life.
For her, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we see why. She's into that.
Yeah. And then I guess the final shot, we're now back in the present. She's back with Hillary from that night, and they're staring at the market. I guess, was she just thinking back on this? Like, where do we think we're going for episode 3?
Yeah, I don't know. But I love that dress. Nicole Kidman's dress.
Nicole
and Kidman. I loved Hillary's jumpsuit, too.
I loved that. I love the jumpsuit. I'm not a jumpsuit person because I don't. I love how they look on other people, but I can't deal with the going to the bathroom and taking off the white. Yeah. It's like a deal breaker for me with them. I want to wear them, but it's too much of a hassle. But it is so cute, that one. So cute. Yeah.
What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, this is the thing. I mean, we're going to have to, I assumed we were getting more on what happened and who's involved and, you know, what everyone's role is. And also the continuing of the, you know, how it's affected them individually and as family. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Well, we'll see.
We'll find out.
Yeah.